Blog Talk Radio.
Ulu in Review, our monthly update on Ulu and Ujamaa, or as we know it, family-centered economics. We will be back in a couple of minutes. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace family, welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Join if you have not done so. So we can have, there is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs as well as future suggestions for future programs. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Baba Hakima, one of the founding members of Ulu. Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sis. And as I mentioned last month, these third Thursdays seem to come around so quick. But it's always good to be with the family. And but I'm doing well. My family's doing well. And I hope the same is true with all of our listening audience and their families as well.
Thank you for that. So, Baba Hakima, where would you like to begin this month's Ulu in review? What updates do you have on Ulu and family-centered economics or UTMA?
Yeah, and I want to cover a couple of points before we get into the updates and just remind members and remind the listening audience that every third Thursday we're going to do these updates, and we want to create an environment where members feel almost compelled to be here every Thursday, but at least every third Thursday for the updates and announcements. And I'm going to encourage the committee chairs to be prepared, if they need be, to share updates on the third Thursday as well. I'm sharing it from my position as the acting general manager. But I know from time to time there are things that are happening with committees, and especially as we get close to March with our annual meeting, we will need to keep the members updated in every way we can, including here on Dare to Win. So I just want to remind us that a good part of what we do here every third Thursday is to remind us of the third Thursday for updates. The other thing is that this recording, we're going to send it back out to members, not to the general public. But for those members who may have not been able to chime in tonight, we're going to put this recording in your email inbox so you'll have a chance to play the recording and learn of the updates and anything else that we want to share. So, again, I say to the standing committee chairs, you may want to chime in on third Thursdays to share updates coming out of your committee as well. Now, in terms of the updates, as some of us know, in March, we passed a resolution at our annual members meeting to embark upon a major, major structural change for Ulu. And that structural change is that we made a decision to create a new legal formation, that of a nonprofit corporation, to act as the mothership, so to speak, of Ulu, and that mothership would be in position on top of or in a controlling position for our current Ulu structure. So we're creating two large structures, two different legal entities. And there's a reason for that. I'm not going to go into it, but it's a legal and regulatory reason, but it's also a reason in terms of streamlining our operation and putting us in a position to be able to build for the future. To be meaningful, we're going to have to create a formation with hundreds, if not thousands, of local chapters and tens of thousands, if not millions, of members. So this new mm-hmm. structure will accommodate that kind of growth. And so so in terms of updates, all of the filings, state and federal, for the new formation have been filed and in process. The state mm-hmm. filing has come back. The approval is there. The federal filing has been put in motion. We're still waiting on the approval on the federal level, but
mm-hmm.
to operate as a nonprofit is essentially a state consideration. So we are good to go. But then some of the supporting documents and forms that we would need are still being worked on. We have subcommittees mm-hmm. working on bylaws, working on editing the operating agreement and all of the disclaimers that we'll have to make sure are put in place. Those are being worked on. And all of this will come alive on our website. Now, our website will remain the same, usliftingus.com. And mm-hmm. and this will be the website and the face for Us Lifting Us Incorporated, the new nonprofit. The existing formation will be essentially in the members area, the protected password protected environment. But so mm-hmm. we have more than two websites, I should say. I said about to say two, but you mentioned our social media site. That's a website in and of itself, the Ulu community. So I want to alert members, board members, and our friends that probably within the next 30 days or less, you'll begin to see the website change. One of the big changes you'll see in the website is you'll see a promotional video on the homepage of the website. And that's going to be a major, major, major tool for recruiting new members and also for encouraging the development of our local chapters around the country and around the world. So in terms of updates, specifically the legal filings for the new legal structures have been submitted. We have the services of attorney Clark R. Robinson, R. Arrington, that provide leadership for us in this process. So those are the tangible updates in terms of the legal. Now, also, we want to, every third Thursday, we want to remind us of a part of the reason, not only that we're here, but that we are doing the work that we're pointing to. And we're going to go in a little bit more detail about the work in a moment. But I want to, and those of you who were on the call last week, you will remember, we put out a term, and the term is sovereign intellect. And we want to mention that every week. But unlike last week, I want to mention that there are a kind of three elements that we want to point to as it relates to sovereign intellect. And we get the term and the concept from one of our friends, a professor at Delaware State University, Ezra Aharon. And most of what we talk about will come from his third book on sovereignty, and the title is The Sovereign Psyche. And for members, I want to encourage all members to go into the members portal and go to the resource library, and you'll see an image of the book, The Sovereign Psyche, and I want you to click on it and order the book. The ebook is roughly $5, and that's what I got, the ebook. But one of the things that Professor Aharon talks about in his treaty on sovereignty, he uses three terms or three phrases that really help us understand what we are talking about when we talk about sovereign intellect. And the reason we do this is because it is sovereign intellect that is creating and sustaining us lifting us. It doesn't, us lifting us does not come out of a desire to make incremental changes in the way we are treated in America or in the world. It comes out of another human emotion and need relative to self-determination and self-rule. So what Professor Aharon uses to get us to understand what he's talking about are three phrases, and I want to go through them now. The first one is chattel slavery. Most of us are familiar with that term of Africans being chattel, being movable property during the captivity phase. So he wants us to understand that that is a state, that is a state of mind as well. So the first term is chattel slavery. The second term he wants us to focus on is chattel freedom. This is a stage where you're still chattel, you're still property, but not as a slave, but as a quote-unquote free person.
Mm-hmm.
But still chattel, still property, still essentially being bought and sold and used for a higher purpose of another people. So the first term is chattel slavery. The second term is chattel freedom. And the third term is self-authentic freedom. In other words, we've moved from chattel slavery through chattel freedom, and now we've evolved to this third stage that he calls self-authentic freedom. And now we're free, but we're free under our own terms, or at least free under our own freed mind, where we know what it is, where it is that we are going and how it is that we will get there. What he's suggesting is that all people go through these stages. You know, they may not have been a part of a chattel slavery position, but if they've been subdued, they go through phases where they come back to a position of understanding what they have to do to position themselves to protect and promote their self-interest. And what the professor is saying specifically to us is that many of us have evolved to a self-authentic freedom position, or a sovereign psyche, or sovereign intellect. What he points out, and this is critical, and I'll mention this over and over again, a people who have evolved to a sovereign psyche do only two things. Well, I shouldn't say do only two things, but the major two things that they do or build systems and build institutions. I'm not suggesting that a people who, once they become sovereign in their psyche, don't have to fight and don't right. have to heal. But the primary thing that they do and know they must do, they must build the future that they desire. And it's only them that can build it. So once you become a sovereign in your thinking and in your psyche and in your being, then you focus on building systems and institutions that further your group interests. So I want to, you know, I just wanted to say that, and we'll say that in some way, and maybe not in the same way, each time we're together. So we're reminded that our primary job is to build the future that we desire for ourselves and future generations. So that being said, and sis, make sure you stop me at any point, and you should desire that I go on. I'll pick up, and in your opening, you talked about Ujamaa, or family-centered economics. So as a formation, us lifting us, made up of brothers and sisters representing themselves, representing their families, and representing organizations and institutions, what we have come to do is to build systems and institutions. The primary work is building what we call Ujamaa, or family-centered economics. And in our promotions, and most of us will begin to see this very, very quickly, also the video that I talked about that will be posted on the website will go into what I'm about to mention. Now, Ujamaa, or family-centered economics as practiced, as taught, promoted and practiced by ULU, has basically three basic elements, and then a fourth one where we repeat the process over and over again. But the first element of Ujamaa, or family-centered economics, well, let me back up a minute. Let's talk about the reason we call Ujamaa family-centered economics. Most of us are familiar with Ujamaa as the fourth principle of the Nguzo Saba, or the Kwanzaa principle, and it's celebrated the fourth night of Kwanzaa. And generally, it's defined as cooperative economics. For our purpose, it's not specific enough, so we have redefined it as family-centered economics, economics that's centered on the family, or economics coming out of a family relationship. In its original formation out of Tanzania, Mwalimu Julius Nyerere says that Ujamaa is familyhood that creates an economy. So it's family, the extended family, and what families do to support and grow their families, and so they create an economy or an economic arrangement around that. So that's where it comes from. So for us, when we say Ujamaa, we're always talking about Ujamaa from the standpoint of family-centered economics. Because, again, I want to point out that the definition that we have at Kwanzaa as cooperative economics is not as tightly defined as we think it should be, and it's hard to build from that, so we've redefined it. But anyway, let me go back to the three elements of Ujamaa, then we're going to stop and deal with some questions and feedback before we go any further. The first element of Ujamaa is gathering, pooling, or aggregating your resources, gathering, your resources.
Mm-hmm.
That's your capital, that's your labor, that's your intellect. Anything that you want to put as a part of the mix of building the institutions, the systems and institutions that we talked about earlier. So the first element of Ujamaa is gathering resources. Again, it's your capital, your labor, your ideas, your energy. The second element of Ujamaa is using what you've gathered to build productive elements within the community that promote community health, community development, community wellness. In our case, we're specifically talking about building group-owned business enterprises. So we gather our resources and then we point those resources towards the building of successful group-owned business enterprises. So that's the second element of Ujamaa. The third element is once those group-owned business enterprises began to grow, and of course, in their formation and growth, they automatically create benefits. They create jobs.
Right.
They provide needed goods and services. They provide a stimulus to the local community. Not only a stimulus in terms of business activity, but it also sparks energy. In other words, we see ourselves progressing and doing things and making things happen. So the third element is as these institutions grow and mature, they produce a surplus over and above the job creations, over and above the needed goods and services that they may provide, but they provide a surplus. So the third element is the sharing of the surplus back to the community, back to the workers, back to the member owners that may be involved in the community, back through charities in the community. So the three elements are very, very organic. Organic in terms of the sense that it's what nature does, it's what mankind has always done, and it's what we're going to have to do to build the future. You gather your resources, you build productive units, and when you succeed, you share the benefits. And the fourth element, if I can call it an element, is that you repeat this over and over and over again. And you never stop because as long as you need community, you're always going to be gathering resources, building new institutions and systems, and sharing the wealth and sharing the benefit. So it's a process that you don't just do. It's a process that's regenerative, that is the life cycle of a community, a people, or nation that's doing for self. So I want to stop here and entertain any questions, any feedback we may have.
Well, right now, Baba, no one has their hand raised, so we are free to go on.
Okay.
What I wanted to say is what you said, that it's like, you know, you see in restaurants that have rewards programs, you know, they say eat, earn, repeat, eat, earn, repeat. So
I like that.
That's what we're doing. We're building, you know, sharing profits and repeating. We're aggregating, building, sharing, repeating. So
we're
right in, you know, and as if we put it out there, every time somebody goes to a restaurant and they see a sign on the door that says eat, earn, repeat, they should think of Ubu and think about our process of gathering together, building, sharing resources, and repeat. And you'll see that, you know, it's a natural thing. It's a natural flow.
It's a natural thing. Yeah. And it's really beautiful. And it's simple. It's really not complicated. And sometimes we think empowerment is something hard. Essentially, once you understand the mechanics, it's really kind of simple, kind of fun. I mean, you can teach it to babies, you know, and you just do it. And what happens in time is that the size of your economy, the size and force of your presence on the planet creates the space you need to promote and protect your own interests. And that's not to say that other people are not promoting and protecting their interests. They are. They should.
Absolutely.
As we mentioned last week, we're the most populous people on the planet. You know, we outnumber everybody else. We're the parent people of the planet. So we definitely deserve our space. But we don't deserve it unless we, I use this as a friendly term, unless we take it. In other words, you must acquire the space deliberately. You're not going to accidentally acquire the space. So I'll say take it.
You know, Baba, in this society where we are currently, we see how they treat elders. They are, you know, basically tossed aside. So that's what we can expect unless we step up and plant our feet and say, no, we'll handle this. So
there you go.
We have someone with their hand up, so I'm going to take this call.
Ashe.
Grand Rapids with the last four digits 7204. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Well, grand evening, my brothers and sisters. This is Deborah calling from. How you doing? Calling
doing
from
good. You sounding good.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be on this call. I just wanted to say, you know, I noticed when I be looking around that we do have a lot of people that have their own black businesses, but I see one. I think one problem that we need to really promote, and I know we don't have it all together yet, but we need to really, really promote it. And that's buying from each other.
Yes.
We need to promote that more and more. I don't care whether it's an egg or whatever.
Yes.
We need to promote buying from each other. I don't care if it's a needle, you know, when sewing things. I don't care what it is. It's just we got to start completely as much as possible buying from each other, because as long as we don't do that, they're still making money off of us.
Yeah, you're right. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment, because the UBCs or the local ULU chapters, that's a big part of what they will do. There's a process for doing that. And we want to include already existing businesses and new businesses in our community in our process. And so we're not only concerned about creating new group-owned, ULU-owned business enterprises, but there's a way to integrate already existing enterprises in such a way that there is a synergy and us building together. So you're so right. You're so right. One of the things that warmed my heart, I haven't seen it lately, but we have good many Caribbean food outlets, restaurants and stores, particularly Jamaicans. And I saw this several years ago where you would see Jamaican trucks, wholesalers, pulling up to the restaurants and the stores. In other words, they weren't just the stores and the restaurants, but they'd also built a business-to-business in supplying the needs. So there are so many areas where we can create new businesses that may not face the public, but that serve our already existing businesses and create jobs and create benefits as well. But you're so right, Deborah. We got to do that.
Yes, we do. We really do. And that would be the beginning of everything. I mean, that's it. That's what we need to do.
I say. Well, I tell you, sounding good.
Thank you. Y'all
right,
have a good day. Thank you, Sister Deborah. I say thank you, baby. Thank you.
It's always good to hear those voices of sisters and brothers that have been around for 8 or 9 years with us. And loyal and always there, and even in times of good health or bad health, you know, we've had a consistent, persistent group of brothers and sisters who have rolled up their sleeves and did the work, but contributed mightily in terms of the ideas and concepts. And Deborah is one of those.
We are grateful for her. There are no other hands up at this time. So
okay. Well, what I want to do, Matt, I want to kind of talk about where the rubber meets the road. We'll talk about concepts, but how do we make it come alive? How, you know, the gathering, the building, and the sharing, you know, we're going to make that into a formula, right? you're going to help make that into a formula. So, but how do we bring it alive? I say to members, friends, potential members, we're going to come to you with a campaign again in a few weeks, and we're going to promote new memberships in ULU. And we mentioned it last week. It's all going to be built around the question, do you feel we should control the economics of our community? And then for the thousands, tens of thousands, maybe millions who answer yes to that question, we're going to lead them to, you know, to a process. But essentially what we want to do, in keeping with the fact that we're building systems and institutions, is point to, and we mentioned it a little bit last week, but we're going to go into a little deeper this week, the primary tool that we'll use to build and maintain Ujamaa, our system. And that primary tool is the UBC, the ULU Base Collective. These are collectives of ULU members in local communities. There are our ULU chapters scattered throughout the country and in other parts of the world as well. So these are the primary tools that we will use to build out the system that we're talking about and the elements that we're talking about. Primarily, the UBCs in local communities acting as chapters of ULU, in other words, putting in place Ujamaa on the ground, not in spook estate, but in real estate. In other words, not in concepts and principles, but in practice on the ground. So these ULU members in local communities will do any number of things to keep them together and hold them together as a productive small collective. Now, these are going to be relatively small collectives, probably mm-hmm. in a neighborhood of 15, 20, 30 members, probably no bigger than that. And once they get to that size and begin to grow bigger, some of them will split off and become new entities. And we're going to start in Atlanta. I'm not sure how well you know Atlanta, Sister Q, but a lot of brothers and sisters know that Atlanta is a very spread out place. And so mm-hmm. we have pockets of black folk all over the place, but primarily we have an east side and a west side. So when we call for the UBC formation in Atlanta, we're going to call all of us to a Zoom session. And then mm-hmm. while we're on that Zoom session, we're going to identify some leadership on the east side and some leadership on the west side. So we'll be incubating two UBCs in the Atlanta metropolitan area to take the lead in this new drive. But what will okay. they be doing? Primarily, and I'll say this, they're going to be doing any number of things to hold them together and to do some things that benefit the members and the families and the businesses that make up the UBC. By the way, I want to say this because a lot of times we forget it. Some ULU members are not individuals. Some ULU right. members are institutions. So, mm-hmm. so members of ULU are not only individuals but institutions. But the primary things that, looking at our system and the things that we've covered so far, the primary mm-hmm. things that the UBC will be doing is looking into its community and identifying needs and opportunities for new business development. It may be a new business that starts from scratch, or it may be an existing business that for whatever reason we can acquire and mm-hmm. and take it forward and build it even stronger. So the first thing right. that the UBC will be concerned about as it relates to this system is identifying needs and opportunities for new business development. Once they identify that, then there's a prescribed way for them, that local community, through developing a concept letter and sharing it with management in ULU. And so once that UBC identifies what it thinks is an idea or an opportunity that would meet a need and mm-hmm. a possible new business that could be successful, that could create jobs, provide needed goods and services, some of the things that Deborah reported to when we talked a little earlier, then that's mm-hmm. the first thing they do. If that idea is a workable idea, that it makes sense, then what the local community, the UBC, will be tasked with doing, and it will receive some help in doing this, is doing some substantial research around that idea. Some market research, other kinds of research that maybe relate to a product, a delivery service, how you get the product to the people. So mm-hmm. The idea that's a good idea, we'll drop it back to the local UBC for further refinement. And then there's a process that goes through. And part of it is a refined process of building out a business plan and a proposal mm-hmm. for funding. And if it goes through that process and it meets all of the tests, then it will be considered for funding. And when we say funding, we don't mean that the local community has to fund it on its own. All of Oulu and the aggregation and the gathering that we talked about earlier, we will, mm-hmm. as a global collective, look at that idea and we will say, that's a go. We like it. It's impressive. Let's do it. And then it's on the local community to then, with help, to organize that new business enterprise, to staff it, to support it, and allow it, and support it in its growth.
Mm-hmm.
The business will be organized, managed, run, supported for the most part locally, but remember, it's a group-owned enterprise. All of us are owners of it collectively. So all of us are stakeholders. So the better ideas will be duplicated in other cities. In other words, we're looking for ideas that are quote-unquote winners that are that can be easily duplicated in other areas. But one of the things I want to caution all of us about is that we are going to be daring, but we're also going to err on the conservative side. The business almost has to be a sure thing in order to get funded. We can't afford to, quote-unquote, lose the people's money because it's the people's money. We're not talking about funding this from, you know, foundations or grants external to ourselves, because when the institutions that we build, these business enterprises, began to mature and produce a surplus, the surplus belongs to the community. We don't want any surplus going outside of our community, because we allow forces outside of our community to own any or part of it, or the enterprises. So the much as you and I talked about a formula when we talked about pooling, building, and sharing, the same thing is kind of true as the UBC. We come up with the idea. We shop the idea to the greater membership, and if it's a good idea and we think it's a good idea, then we refine it and we do our due diligence. We research it. We turn it upside down. We shake it. And if it's still a firm idea, then we fund it. And then we do it all over again. We don't just look for one idea. Once we got that up and going, then what's the next good idea that meets a need and is an opportunity in our community? One of the things that I don't want us to forget is that there are African people in the world that are dirt poor, that are starving, that need our assistance in the greatest and most fundamental way. But it also is true is that there are some of us who have relative wealth. It's said that more than $1.3 trillion, it's more than that now. I've heard that figure for a long time. But over $1 trillion flows through the hands of Africans in America on a yearly basis. Mm-hmm. Now, most of us don't know how much money that is. If you go to our website and click on $1 trillion and look at the schematic in terms of how much money it is, that's a lot of money. But with the Oulu system, if we were able to build a network of group-owned enterprises connected with our already existing businesses, and if we could tap into the flow of that more than $1 trillion that came through our community, came through our hands, and capture just 1%, not 10%, not 3%, not 20%, but just 1% of that $1 trillion. We'd be looking at over $10 billion a year in gross revenues or in revenue from tapping into that system. So what we are building is a potentially, and as it grows, an economy that continues to grow and grows into not the millions, but into the billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars on an annual basis. We've got to think that way, because if you're thinking about a business that does $50,000, $100,000, or $1 million, that's like going to the Atlantic Ocean or to the Pacific Ocean with a thimble or a teaspoon, you know. You know, we need the service of the ocean or of the sea. So what I want to impress upon all of us is that whether you're a member, whether you're a prospective member, and I want all members and even prospective members, even before you make a decision to join, we want you sharing this information with brothers and sisters you already know. So even this recording, when it goes back out, and it's only going to go back out to members, but I want to encourage members to share the recording and share other promotional materials with your family, with your friends, with your coworkers, with your comrades, because I suggest that when we ask the question, do you feel we should control the economics of our community, the number of persons who would say yes is into the millions, not thousands, not tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands, but millions. Now, what can we do with that yes? I suggest that we can build a new world with the system that we're putting in place. And we've covered some of the elements. It's more to it than that. And I'm not sure. I think we got another 7 or 8 minutes on the call. I want to impress upon us that the elements that are stopping us from building a new world for ourselves are primarily in our minds, imaginary. They're fears and phobias, what we call FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. The barriers to us creating a new world are really not in the world. They're phobias and fears. They're not real. I'm not saying they're not real. I'm not saying that they're not real forces in the world that would stop us. But we remember, I know you remember, Sister Q, we used to say there's nothing more powerful than a made-up mind. So once we make our minds up, there's very little to stop. And so there's a lot of latitude for growth, and we just simply got to take the opportunity to grow. Anything else we need to cover, or any calls?
We don't have any calls right now.
So, okay.
We're free to, what do we have, 5 minutes left?
Yeah.
So you can use that 5 minutes however you feel.
Okay. Now, I want to remind, and you reminded them earlier, reminded people earlier how to, if they're listening for the first time, and we probably need to get better, I need to get better when I'm on, reminding people if they missed the first announcement to press 1 on your phone to be recognized to come in. Some people know it already, but we will be back.
That's a
with
good point.
We'll be back with a Ulu in Review the third Sunday of next month.
The third Thursday.
Yeah. Right, the third Thursday. Now, I want to remind members that this coming Sunday is the third Sunday of the month, and our members only call on Zoom is this Sunday. So look for the announcement. Be on the call. Do better than that. When you receive the announcement, reach around to the Ulu members that you are familiar with to make sure that they have the notice as well. Sometimes we change our email address and we don't change it in the system, and some of you miss the notices because for whatever reason your email has gone dead. So
right.
I just want to make that announcement this coming Sunday for our members only call. I think that is at 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
No, I think it's 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. Okay, good enough.
I think
thank
it's
you for
one,
correcting
one,
me.
Yeah,
yeah, good.
I'm
good.
Not for sure, but I think it's 1 o'clock.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But make sure you look for the announcement. I'm really excited about some of the things that we're doing. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say it in good spirits. Well, let me say it. I guess I'll be judged for maybe being arrogant as I say it. But as I look in the community and look at in the past, you know, I've been involved in our people's movement consistently since the sit-in movements in the mid-60s.
Okay.
And I'm looking from then on up through now, with the possible exception of the Nation of Islam under leadership of Elijah Muhammad, I don't see that we've had, how would you say, a models of economic development and empowerment coming from ourselves. So when I look at
right.
the broader community today and I ask the question, who is on the leading edge of helping us to control the economics of our community? I don't see organizations and institutions out there other than Ulu. Now, we're in a fairly small footprint at this time. We are building. But it's really important that we occupy that space in a robust way of creating the institutions, the organizations, and everything that's involved in us dominating the commercial landscape of our communities. Now, I'm not suggesting that we pump in electric power or water, or we're gonna take care of the garbage or do the roads tomorrow. But I am suggesting that there is room for us to dominate the day-to-day commerce. On the streets, facing the community, and in between that, in terms of manufacturing, light manufacturing, delivery, any number of things that we can do. And so while there are organizations and institutions that do a great job in keeping us informed in terms of protecting our interests, internationally, nationally, and locally, and institutions that educate and encourage us, institutions that do a great job in helping us maintain our health and our wellness. But as it relates to economic self-determination, there is a lack of emphasis in that area, and a lack not only of emphasis, but in the creation and the fortification of tools that help us succeed. Now, there is the notion that if we have more black businesses, independently owned black businesses, that that is the solution. We know through practice, historical references and practices over and over again, we know from looking at what has happened that that is not a recipe for group control. It's a recipe, yes, for individual advancement, for family advancement, but for the collective, it has to be more than that. It has to be that. Added with that has to be the group-owned enterprises, the co-ops, and all together forming a federation, so to speak, or a, I'll use this word, and, well, I won't use the word. Some people would be ill of me for using the word. But a planned economy, including already existing businesses, group-owned enterprise, co-ops, and the institutions, the church, you know, the sororities, the schools, all the institutions. But central to that mix is the group-owned enterprises, which provide for us the steering mechanism. In other words, it provides a rudder, because otherwise we don't have any control over the direction of our economic activity. It fluctuates and flows based on market need. It has to be planned from a central point of view, and tools have to be put in place so we can incrementally adjust to take it to the left or adjust to take it to the right. In other words, we need to be in a position to incrementally steer this emergent economy. So I've probably gone past my time.
That's okay. Thank you, Baba Hatima, for sharing the Ulu update with us for this month. And so we will be doing the third Thursday every month, not Thursday after the meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got thrown off with that as well. So, So it makes it easier to put it on the calendar. And as we update the website, we'll be populating the calendar on the website as well. So
look for
a lot of changes. We're going to do. And I really appreciate you reminding us of our social media platform. That's a beautiful environment. There's a lot that we can do with it. What we really do need is one or two, maybe young Ulu members who are tech savvy, to get in there and take leadership and stir that community up. That's all it's going to take. Once it gets stirred up and the conversation begins to flow, the videos begin to flow, the forums are there, and the UBCs, when they come online, each UBC is going to be encouraged to create a group for themselves. And so that will help stimulate. Yeah, they'll have to stimulate. Okay. So every UBC will have their own. And, you know, think of that. Every chapter will have its own page on the internet, and they can communicate through that portal to all of their people.
For sure.
I mean, It's a very usable tool. It's being underutilized now. But we have a good many tools in place, and I'll say again, we really need young people to step up and help us administer or manage some of these platforms. I'll say this: we need help also with social media, particularly with Instagram and Twitter. Brother Thurman could use some help with Facebook as well. We have a fairly robust YouTube channel, but we're not using it in all the ways that we could. So from a information marketing point of view, Brother Rob, who heads up marketing and media, he could use some additional help. So for those members who are listening now or will be listening to the recording, hey, roll up your sleeves. You know, call us at the phone number and the email address, use the email address on the website, and let us know that you're willing to assist.
Yeah, but the temptation said ain't too proud to be.
No, you know, because one of the things that, and we don't talk about it that much, but as we grow, a lot of these positions are going to be paid positions. Right now, they're volunteer positions. And but we know in the long run, we do need to create stable administrative components in ULU that are there irrespective of who is elected to the board.
Or
might be the chairperson of this committee or that committee. We need professional, talented, imaginative staff people. And we will be involved. One of the things I remember, as a reflection, in my youth, Walmart was a hick business. You wouldn't want to go into Walmart because it was, you know, it was a rural business. It wasn't sophisticated at all. But in the book, in Sam We Trust, Sam Walton stole or recruited the best minds in marketing and distribution to come to Walmart. And now it's the biggest retailer in the world. Mm-hmm. But it started small. It started in the rural. And not until it became a certain size did it come into the space of the Sears, the Montgomery Wards, the other stores that were out there. But when it came, it came with systems and institutions that allowed for it to assume the position that it assumes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we think that Amazon is the top marketer in the world, but it's not. Walmart is still the one marketer in the world, and I think maybe that Chinese big box store may be second or whatever. But anyway, Walmart is still
Well, you know
Walmart.
What, Papa? We have somebody with their hand up. So,
listen to that.
If
they want
to keep the conversation going, we'll keep it going.
All right, then.
So
good.
We have a caller from the last 4 digits, 8912. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question.
Yes, this is Brother Thurman, and I'm calling from Richmond. And I just want to thank you for continuing overtime, and if you continue for the next 45 minutes, that'll be wonderful. And I just want to give you much love and praise, Baba Hakima, and all of the ULU members, including Sister Q and Sister Deborah, the callers, and everybody that's listening. This has just been a powerful message with great, great clarity, a powerful blueprint or black print of what we must do. And I can't see how any of us could listen to the things that you have laid out, and of course there's more that you're going to bring, but what you have laid out tonight is just so powerful, and it's, if you use the word crystal clear, it's crystal clear, and we'd have to be out of our African mind to say no to wanting to, take control of the economics of our community. And I just wanted to thank you. That's a major reason. It's so well laid out. And thank you, brother. And keep on doing what you're doing. And Sister Q, you do the same, and the rest of the Ulu family.
Well, thank you, brother Thurman. Yeah, you've been a soldier, you know. So, yeah, everything is coming into view. I mean, things are coming, aligning for the trek that we must be on to Kilimanjaro, to ascend to the peak in terms of dominion. So thank you, Brother Thurman, and for all you do. And I like the image you came up with, us lifting us. I like that.
Uh-huh.
I saw that previous, but yeah, it's powerful. I think I'm going to copy it and use it in other areas as well.
No doubt. I was thinking the same thing.
Good. All right.
So,
all right, then. Well,
so,
I don't want to keep your family over time. Yeah.
Okay. So thank you, Baba Hakima, and we want to thank everyone that joined us this evening for comments. Join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. And remember, as Baba Hakima told us on the first meeting after a storm, we do not invite the storm to come back and help us clean up. So with that, I will say peace.
Peace.